Welcome to the journey, my friends. This is your host, Scott. Welcome into Planet Product Owner. This is season 6, episode 1, and I am going to get right into the content today. Welcome in. If you're new here, we talk a lot about the art of being a product owner and pretty much all things agile in this new season. Like I said, at the conclusion of season 5, I want to dive into a lot more topics than what we have discussed in the past, because I know you guys are journeying through this crazy thing, right? So I got a question for you. Do you have flow? Do you know flow? Is flow in even your scrum team? Like, I know we talk a lot about flow when we're talking about Kanban or other Kanban, Kanban, whatever. When we talk about some of these other methods of what it is that we're doing. And we've talked in the past on an episode about a burn down or a cliff on your burn down chart. And what does it look like to you? Does it look like a cliff or does it look like some cascading waterfall, right? A cascading waterfall is really what we're wanting to look like, but don't get the waterfall term confused with the old mindset of waterfall development. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for ways that we can enhance our flow, even in a scrum team. So today's episode is going to cover a little bit about that. What are some of the impacts of your flow issues? Why are you having them? And then I'm going to give you 3 ways to improve that flow. Of course, you know me, I'm going to give you 3. That's just how we roll here. So sit back, buckle up. Let's get to Planet Product Owner. All right, talking about flow. And a lot of times what happens here is that if we're not getting the flow that we want, like moving left to right, you've heard that. And if you're new to this, old to this, or whatever, you're seeing this kind of movement left to right through the lanes or the columns on your board or your system, whatever you call it. And, at first, it's like, well, this is just really just taking us too long, or we're not able to reach the end of it. And here's the reality of it. There are at least 3, probably more than 3, right? But I'm going to give you 3 impacts real quick that you're probably going to see or you're seeing with the flow. Now, some of these are severe. I mean, a lot of you are just thinking, wait a minute, I got flow, man. I want to improve the flow. And I think some of the tips that I'm going to give you in the next segment is going to help you with that too. Even if you got some flow, but you just want to loosen it up a little bit and let it go. All right. Now, if we're in more of a severe case though, and we think, okay, wait a minute, we're just stuck, right? I mean, I'm not getting work. We're not getting any throughput. The team is just kind of sitting there waiting on work, maybe even something like that. If we're just totally dead in the water, I think some of these are going to be a little extreme, but I think a lot of these impacts are going to impact just your average bear out there as well. I think I've seen this too often to say you've never seen these things. Okay. So the first impact, I think, with the flow issues that you may be having is that you're prohibiting fast feedback. And remember, the whole concept of agile development is that we're centered on the customer and we build software, we develop software with lean principles. That means we're inspecting and adapting frequently. You know, if we are shutting down the loop, the feedback loop, right, because we're not flowing or our work is not flowing, how do we know that we're doing it right? And we've got to be able to get that affirmation. You remember I told you about the affirmation. We got to affirm the positive. And that's really important when you're even getting clarity on a story or you're working with a business partner or with a customer about what it is you're being asked to do. Getting that positive affirmation. We want to affirm the positive. Yes, we're on the right track. The other thing too is this confidence, right? How do we know that we are confidently doing what we're doing frequently enough, right? And showing others our work and allowing them to see that. See, we won't know if we're on the right track or not, right? If we're not getting that fast feedback. So the fast feedback piece of it is really critical. And that's a big impact to your practice when you experience flow issues. Now, the second thing is you're creating bottlenecks. Duh, you already know that, right? But the creating bottlenecks is not just for you. You're creating bottlenecks possibly for other teams, but more importantly, you're creating a bottleneck for your customer. And that's the big issue here, I think, when you're experiencing flow issues, routine flow issues, right? So I don't have to go into the impacts much about creating bottlenecks for you, the other teams, or your customers. But you probably know if you're the holdup, you know, two other teams. Like if you are the enabler work or you're the runway work for the other team, then what you're doing is you're keeping a dirty front porch. And y'all know how I feel about dirty front porches, man. We got to keep our front porch clean, right? But something else that's happening when you're creating bottlenecks for yourself or for your team is that you're risking burnout from your team. Y'all remember what I told you a long time ago. Developers, you know, they can't really prioritize that well. A lot of them are probably more in the ADHD bucket. They're kind of wild and loose, right? But they, one thing about them, though, is that they have to get stuff done. And they want to solve the problem. So if they can't get things done, it's going to hurt their ego. It's going to hurt their pride. It's going to bang up their self-confidence because they feel like they can't solve the problem anymore. And this is all a result of not having flow. And we don't want to have that because the last thing we need is for our team members, our people to shut down because they've lost confidence in themselves or they've lost confidence in the method by which we're getting stuff done. Okay. So we really got to develop this flow model here and get this thing going. Now, the other thing you're doing here too, as a result, as far as creating these bottlenecks is that you're risking losing trust in the organization, right? They may not have trust in you anymore. The art, you know, you're risking losing the trust of the art or the organization or the value stream, right? Not just your team. If you're not delivering and if your throughput is not where it should be. Now, that obviously doesn't speak well for the whole message and the mindset that we're trying to promote and work in right here, right? So for self-organization and promoting that mindset, things like that, that's not going to help our cause. So let's make sure that we're keeping an eye out for that impact. The third impact, I think, primary impact, again, I mean, there's a lot of them, right? When we're not flowing and we don't have the throughput we need or want. But this whole idea of stopping and starting. So it's deeper than just not finishing something. Let me dive in and unpack that for you for a minute. What we're doing is that when we stop and start these tasks, so we're losing priority. That's kind of what's happening here. We're losing priority if we stop and start a lot. Let me see if I can help you understand that. So if we're unable to gain trust that we're going to accomplish our objectives that we committed to or we set out for, right, then we may not be getting any more of those objectives to our team. Well, that's not good, right? So we're losing prioritization not only in the work that we're doing, but prioritization in getting, you know, being top of the list to get the work, right? So we lose our sense of accomplishment all over again when that happens. And like I've said, if we don't make our priorities and our work visible, then other people are going to assume that we don't have any priorities and we don't have any work. So what does that mean for them? If we're not socializing that and we're not able to show that, then they really don't have a leg to stand on, right? So they're going to hijack that and they're going to direct you to different priorities. And this may be work that your team really felt strongly about, what your product owner or your business partner really felt strongly about delivering, right? You had a great business case for it, but because we've stopped and started so much, we're not able to deliver it. So that's just not a good situation to be in. So what I'd like to do is offer you some suggestions here and some tips in the next and final segment, by the way, on how we can improve that flow. Now, again, some of this stuff is going to be out of the book. Some of this stuff is just off the top of my head. I just started writing and I want to give it to you here. You guys probably already have some ideas and I look forward to hearing that from you at scott@planetproductowner.org. But let's see what I've got for you here today in the next segment. Stick around. All right, we're rounding it out here. So we've got some impacts that we've defined and discovered, and you've probably got your own set of impacts, you know, or result of your lack of flow. All right, so let's talk about some ways that we can improve that real quick. The first one that comes to mind, and even if you're in Scrum, so don't turn the dial yet. I mean, this is a Kanban principle, but WIP limits. I've been asked a lot about work in progress limits or WIP limits. And so let me help you if you're new to this thing. All right. So those of you who have been around this and you already know what it is, then walk out for a minute or whatever you got to do. But I'll be right back to it. So it means what we're doing is we're limiting the number of work items in a certain state so we can ensure we're not just starting stuff, but we're finishing stuff. Now, when I say state, some of you may be like, what is that? Well, we're talking about the columns or the lanes that you have in your workflow. As you can see, your work flowing from left to right. Okay, so while it is more of a Kanban mechanism, Kanban, Kanban, whatever you call it, I call it Kanban. That's what I'll call it. It could be introduced in Scrum as well. And so the idea is that we as a team decide that, hey, wait a minute, we have hit our gag factor, right? We have hit our limit on the number of work items in the in progress state, because we're just in progress right here, and I'm going to pick up another one, I'm going to put it into in progress, and I'm going to pick up another one, I'm going to put it into in progress. But meanwhile, the review state or the performance or testing state, whatever other states or lanes that you have right there, those tend to suffer because you're not moving work from left to right. And so if we decide as a team, hey, on this column, we're only going to have, and I'll just pick a number. You guys got to tell them, you guys got to make the call on what the number is, okay? We say, hey, instead of just dragging something over to end the progress, we can only have 4 work items, stories, tasks, whatever they are, 4 work items in this lane, all right, at a time. Now, we can have some rules that override that, like if it's an emergency release or if it's an emergency item that has to come up, or if the CEO the CEO's executive secretary got the first time call center rep on his first day and got the wrong answer, and now there's a 4-alarm fire to go out there and change all of our code. I get that stuff. We can override these limits with some simple working agreements, right? But the idea is that we can put a limit on the number there of what we have in that lane at a time. So that's what the WIP limit concept is. Now, it should already be noted, right, that we don't need a WIP limit on our to-do column or on our ready-to-pick-up column, right? Because that should have been done in sprint planning, in the spirit of the sprint, right? So in the spirit of Scrum, in the spirit of the sprint, I guess, that we don't need another WIP limit applied to the done column, because we want to have that column populated by the end of the sprint. And notice I didn't say at the end, but by the end of the sprint. There's a difference in those two words. And you'll get that after you've listened to this maybe twice, what I mean when I say by the end of the sprint and not at the end of the sprint. So the idea is that we don't need a limit on the stuff that we have to do, and we certainly don't need a WIP limit on the done column when we get to the end of that thing. So if we implement and impose these WIP limits on these lanes, then that should get us to a cascade, and we start seeing that trend that we're seeking and not the cliff that we see in our burndown chart, and certainly seeing that work kind of roll off as we go and not rolling it over. Now, the next one that I have, I almost forgot. Don't confuse a WIP limit with a WIP quota. It's really important. Just because it says we can have 4 in this lane at a time, it doesn't mean we always have to have 4. We're not trying to match the number. We're trying to limit us to that number. So keep that in mind. So that's one way you can improve your flow on your team, even on your Scrum team. Now, the second way to improve flow, what I'm going to offer for you today, is I'm going to kind of combine all of these together, like definition of done, acceptance criteria, and sizing. So I know you're probably thinking, thanks, Captain Obvious, I appreciate that tip, but let me dive in and give you the Planet Product Owner version of how we look at these things and see what's going on. Now, let's start with the easy one first, the definition of done. So, product owner, are your quality expectations too high? And you shouldn't be writing the definition of done, by the way. That should be a technical team task for them to figure out. But maybe their quality expectations are too high. Do they include things in the definition of done that just don't need to be included anymore? Or are they simply not clear enough? And so sometimes we're trying to shoot the moon or hit a missing target, right? And we just haven't figured out other ways to solve for that. And maybe there are even things in your definition of done that's not even in your control. So everybody's hands are tied, right? So here's what I'd recommend on that. In your next retro, let's bring that topic up and walk away with one improvement on the definition of done, get a working agreement in place, and get all of that stuff sorted out. Now, the other thing here is the sizing of the stories. I want to cover the sizing of the work items, right? Because you should be able to reach a done state by the end of your iteration or sprint on whatever you're calling it, on any story, any task, all right? You should be able to reach a done state within that time box. Now, if you're not, then probably some kind of splitting techniques need to be put in place. So let me share some of those opportunities with you. Like, and by the way, if you're using this in a group setting and you're listening to this podcast, like I know a lot of you do, you get your team together and you're listening to it and you're pausing it and you're writing down notes or whatever and you're talking about it, this would probably be a good idea. This would probably be a good time for you to jot some of these down and talk about them in your retro so you can measure, manage, and improve. So how do we know we have a problem with right-sized work? And so here are some of the things that I have seen. Now, this is a list of maybe routine, common, usual things that happen from your observations and from your experience. Are you routinely unable to deliver code at the end of your increment or your iteration or your sprint? Routinely unable to deliver it? Or do you usually have more than 2 to 3 back-end routines needed for a story? So if you got 2 or 3 back-end routines that are having to go out and run their business, and you just need all of that stuff to work together for one story, and you may need splitting, do you have more than 2 or 3 manual navigation clicks or selections for one story? Now we're getting into UI stuff. So what I've seen in the past, let me give you an example of that. What I've seen in the past is, you know, we have to click here, then click there, and then go there, and then we get this modal, and then we accept it or cancel it, and then we get the result, right? Well, if you got more than 2 or 3 manual navigation clicks or selections for one story, you probably need to split that. Here's another one. Is it common for your team that you're unable to demonstrate or show the work at the end of the sprint in a timely fashion and leaving time for the feedback? Probably a good idea to split a story. And finally, do you have lots of rollover stories? I mean, that's kind of the telltale sign. If you're rolling over a lot of work to your next sprint or iteration, you probably need to split some of that work. Okay. So that covers the definition of done, acceptance criteria, and sizing. I didn't go to acceptance criteria. Here we go. Duh. Finally, acceptance criteria. Is this the culprit to finishing your work? Product owner, are you finding yourself in a constant battle with the team over like clarifying questions? Are they wearing you out? What do you mean by, can you help me understand this? Clarify this for me. Are you finding that a lot? And do you feel like you're rejecting more stories than you're accepting sometimes, or you're reworking stories, right? Is your collaboration on the struggle bus? We call it the struggle bus down here. I don't know what y'all call it. But this may be an area that you can help with on the acceptance criteria. And you already know that, right? Maybe your acceptance criteria is too complex. Because remember, they're going to shut down after they read through about 6 or 7 lines. That's about the extent of it, all right? Maybe you're asking too much, or maybe you're getting into the weeds too much. Give them the liberty, right, to figure that out, ask the questions, and reach that. Keep it high level. I don't even want to think for a minute. If you've been listening to this podcast, I don't even want to think for a minute that you are prescribing a technical solution to the team in the acceptance criteria. You already know that's a big no-no. And I want to take a second and talk through that one too, by the way. I've heard product owners tell me that the team wouldn't know how to do this work unless I tell them how. Well, can I have a small but difficult conversation on that one real quick with you guys, because I love you. First, you're exposing yourself to a lot of risk in owning that. You can't own that technical solution. It's not something you should be doing. I mean, look, if you have the role as a technical product owner, and that's a thing in some organizations, even though it's not in the spirit of agility and certainly not for Scrum, if you have that role, then great. But if not, and you're just a product owner, you're a business owner type product owner, remember, you're on the balance beam between technology and the customer. You're not the customer, but you should think like the customer. And you're getting their information over to the technology team. And so when we're in that kind of mindset, right, and we kind of back up a minute, then we know we got to get out of the technical details. It's on the team to solve that. They own the how. All right. Now, the second part about that, I think, that comes to mind is, and these things that I see a lot, is that the team, right, the team really wants to make you happy. And they look at you as a leader. So in their minds, you're asking them to do it a certain way, but they might know a better way or think a different way or solve it with some other method or whatever. So they may just feel trapped, right? So you can help them with the acceptance criteria. What you got to do is stay high level, keep it simple, loosen up, okay? Let them create what they create and remind them all that, hey, we don't fail, we learn. And we're not going to learn unless we give them the space to figure it out on their own. They have to develop that sense of ownership. It's on them. So those are areas, the definition of done, acceptance criteria, and the definition of done. Now, let's dive into the last area. You know, it's like a sermon, right, on Planet Product Owner here. We have 3 points. And so here's the third and last point. This last one is kind of big too, and it's one that we often overlook. And I want to talk about that and how you're impacting your flow with this. I want to ask you a question about your sprint planning. See, an input to sprint planning, and I'm going to revisit this, an input to your sprint planning is making sure that you as a product owner, you're honoring your share care time in your personal product backlog or your product backlog, whichever it is. You should be refining as much as you can to remove obstacles, objections, anticipate the risk. You should be doing that ahead of time. So when we get into sprint planning, do you get a sense that it may be disorganized? How can you tell that? Well, if the team usually brings up questions or comments like, hey, I feel like we're missing something here, or maybe they're saying something like this, has compliance or risk or governance, whoever it is, have they signed off on this? Because it doesn't seem like we can do that, right? Or is this not a practice that we normally support? Maybe they're even routinely questioning like the sequence of the prioritization. And this is a big one, by the way. Do they struggle creating a sprint goal? Or are you even using a sprint goal? So these are hints for you, product owner. These could be disruptions to your flow. They're probably leading to Now, look, collaboration is a good thing. All right, let me say that. But when we're collaborating on things that we should already kind of have knocked out, right, then maybe we're wasting time, right? We're wasting collaboration, and we don't want to do that. So I usually coach product owners to honor their commitment of their backlog share care time, and you got to stay at least 2 sprints ahead of the team. That's critical to your success in the real world, all right? Now, we can debate, well, we just need just in time. We just need this. And we're exploring the unknown. And we just got the unknown. Sure, we do. But we've got to do our due diligence on the unknown as well. So staying ahead of the team 2 sprints is great. That's a critical path for you. Another thing that you can do is look at this sequencing issue if that's what's going on. I'd say probably 40% of the issues with sprint planning that I've seen revolve around priorities that are out of sequence. And I would say that another 40% is around needing runway work as a predecessor to the ask. So here's how you work that out in sprint planning, okay? Determine a very small set of entry and exit criteria as a team for the items in the backlog that we say are ready to be pulled into a sprint. When we say they're ready, all right, let's have just a little integrity check there. Just a little keep us honest check, all right? And it doesn't have to be big. Just develop a really small set of entry and exit criteria as a team. So you can't put it in the ready column until it meets these things or it has these things. Maybe it's a draft version of the UI design. Maybe it's a runway worker and able to work from another team, right? So very small thing before we can do that. And then the exit criteria as a team, right, for the items, before they're able to pull them into the sprint and commit to them. So if it doesn't meet those criteria, the team can't commit. So what this is going to do, this is going to prevent you from the risks that you're, you know, obviously encountering of incomplete work or rolled over work. And next, it's going to force your hand product owner into helping remove these objections, impediments, and predecessors ahead of time for the sake of the team. But remember, wait a minute, Scott, we're agile so we don't plan, right? No, that's not the case. We all know that. Now, so if these runway items or enabler work are not done, well, you shouldn't be able to commit to them, right? If you're dependent on their work, if you have the follow-up work for the runway or enabler items, you shouldn't commit to them if those things aren't done. Done, right? Done, like meaning they've been quality checked, they're tested, they're validated, and all of that stuff. You should be getting the inputs or outputs that you need. So those impediments obviously should be escalated. And one thing that I've seen is just because they're escalated, they might not get done, right? Or you might not see much traction on it. But believe me, when I tell you that with visibility comes action. And like I've told you before, in a previous episode, I think I said, I'm not saying no, I'm just saying no, not right now. So we have to remember that other people are telling us that too. Okay. So if we're escalating and nobody's saying anything, the word is mom, they're effectively saying no. They're not saying no, they're saying no, not right now, because that might not be in their priority. Right. So we got to honor that side too. It goes both ways. So, but I will tell you, if it goes on long enough and you start banging the drum loud enough that, hey, these impediments and this runway work, this enabler work, you know, we've escalated. If it goes on long enough, it's going to start getting the attention that it needs. So we talked today about three impacts to flow, gave you three opportunities or three mindsets, three thinking patterns here, which is what I do, obviously, duh, on how to improve that flow. So I just want to take a minute and thank you again, listeners who have been on this journey with me for such a long time. And if you're new here, welcome in again to the journey, my friends, my new friends. Send me some feedback at scott@plantproductowner.org. Give me some feedback if you're listening on Spotify too. I'm going to put a poll out there for you guys. I just love to hear from you guys. Love to hear your stories. As a reminder, I have shut down the Patreon site, temporarily at least. We're on hiatus there. I'm going to refactor this thing and figure out what brings you the most value. And I will give you a way to support me, but not right now. No, not right now. All right, until next time, have a safe and fun lean journey, my friends.